Hi, everybody. We have a Patreon that we call Maltreon. You can join us. We have $3, $5, $10, $20 options. You can get newsletters from my dad, all kinds of neat stuff behind the scenes. Hang out with us, learn about who our guests are before anybody else, and listen to the podcast before anybody else. Go to patreon.com/maltononmovies for more information.
That's patreon.com/maltononmovies.
Hi, everyone. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
You're listening to Maltin on Movies. And our guest today is a friend of mine and somebody I admire as well as like. He's got a new book out called A Path to Paradise, a Francis Coppola, it's Francis Ford Coppola's story. Did I get it right?
Yeah, the path, yes.
Okay. It's because it's not the simplest title, but it's a very specifically chosen title. We'll talk about that in a minute. He's written many wonderful books, all of them worth reading. All of them will reward you for reading them. His name is Sam Lawson. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Leonard. Hi, Jesse. I'm so glad to see your faces.
Ditto, my friend. And most importantly, we collectively worship at the Jeanine Basinger Shrine. And I think that she is one of those people where, as we were just saying, if somebody knows Jeanine, loves Jeanine, there's a beautiful small cult that has been built, and you just know it's a friend. It's like the high sign.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That is exactly right.
We should just tell our listeners who don't know who Jeanine is. She is a...
If you don't know, leave. Get out. Write that now.
She is a living legend, truly. The most celebrated teacher of film in America.
Mm-hmm.
And she teaches and has taught for many years at Wesleyan University in Middletown, Connecticut. And her list of alumni is...
ridiculous.
Yeah, pretty imposing. And yet she said 20 years ago, 25 years ago, at a party given for her on one of her rare trips to L.A. by some of her high-profile grads in the lobby of the CAA building, the big talent agency. But look at what you've sent out into the world. She said, yeah, so why aren't they making better movies?
Yeah.
Which is why we love Jeanine so much.
She's no pushover.
No. We have had her on the show. We do have a Jeanine episode. You can look that up. She's just...
You should just have her on the show. It should
honestly
be interviewing Jeanine. Who needs anyone else?
Yeah, it's... And, you know, the other part of it, though, I do have to say is that she, and this is something you all share, there's a great joy in what you do and sharing the information that you share. Yes. And I think that's the other part of it, is if you get cynical, it doesn't work.
Jesse, you put your finger on something so profound about the movie-going experience as we learn it from Jeanine. We should have fun at the movies.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean we don't think about the movies. Doesn't mean we're not smart about the movies. We're serious about our fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not true of everybody who goes to the movies or who writes about the movies. They don't always go for fun. And I don't mean fun as just happiness. It's not just about going to laugh. It's about going to the movies to feel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Jeanine taught us. And it's you'd be amazed how many people forget that, especially in the book business, the business of writing about movies. So many intellectuals try to turn movies into something they're not by making them esoteric. But the good ones aren't. They're for everyone.
But this is, I think that I'm very lucky because the folks that I grew up with, the movie nerds that I grew up with, they're really, for the most part, is not a show me attitude. I always say there are those that you watch, you sit down in a film, you know, they sit down in the theater, they cross their arms and sort of go, all right, put the movie on.
Yeah.
Why? What is that going to do for you? Most of our friends, they sit down and they say, I really hope this is good. I
Yeah.
really want this to be good. And it's definitely what I've learned from my parents is we want it to be good. I would like to like your movie.
Leonard is such a hero in that respect, like Janine, is that he always roots for the filmmaker. I can say that as someone who's guilty of the opposite. I do not always root for the filmmaker. I have baggage. And this is what makes Leonard a great critic and historian, and where I can really use some more practice. But you want to get to the point where Leonard and Janine are, where you can walk in with the total clarity of the moment, and receive.
Yeah. As I say, I want it to be good. I don't want to sit there and watch a bad movie. Who wants that? You know? I would love it if every
Nobody
movie was
wants
good.
that, but sometimes we have our filmmakers who've disappointed us,
Oh yeah.
who
Of
we feel like
course.
the culture has overpraised, and so we're looking at them with narrowed eyes.
Yeah, of course.
But enough about M. Night Shyamalan.
I was going to make that joke.
Right, that's
I was going to
exactly
make
right.
that joke. You took
That's
it and you ran
exactly
with it.
right. Yes, that's exactly right. Or in my case, Wes Anderson, and I
Oh
walk in
man,
there and I go, "Are you going to do this? Are you going to do this again?" You know,
yeah.
a better critic historian would be instantly open, like Leonard and Janine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm open. I'm always hoping I'm going to like the next Wes Anderson movie,
Yeah.
and sometimes he comes through. The Grand Budapest Hotel is a wonderful movie. And he's made a couple of other really, in my
I like
opinion, really good
Moonrise
ones.
Kingdom.
I did too.
I like
I did
Moonrise
too, Jesse.
Kingdom.
Yeah.
But early on, Rushmore just
Oh, well, it's
knocked me
because
out.
it's perfect.
Knocked me out too. Knocked me out
Rushmore
too.
is perfect. I
Which is
remember.
why I still have hope.
Yeah.
I still live in hope.
Yeah. He seems to have gone deeper into the toy making side of him, the dollhouse side of him, and I want to bring him back to the more human side of him.
Yeah,
On Rushmore.
Now, your newest book, we're going to talk about a lot of the books that you've written. And I like all of them. People don't seem to know your Paul Mazursky book as well as they should.
Thanks.
Your first book was on Blake Edwards, who deserved the book. And you were there to do it, thank goodness. And then you did a book that was a collection of interviews or a series of interviews with the Paul Mazursky, who made some wonderful films and
Yeah.
who's a very interesting man. He made An Unmarried Woman. He made Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice early on. He had a lot of good. Oh, he made Enemies, a love story, which
Isn't that a great movie?
is a great movie
Yeah.
with Ron Silver, who we still miss. What I really enjoyed about that book is that you didn't just print QA, QA. You gave us the sense of what it was like that morning when you walked into his office and his secretary greeted you in his outer office. You went inside and he was waiting for the coffee to arrive before he ate the Danish. And you really put us right there on the spot with you. It was very immediate. And I don't know anyone else who's done quite that. And
Excellent.
it was fun. Again, there's that word. It was fun to read.
What was it like to
Thanks.
write?
Thanks, Leonard. That it was what you said is exactly what I attempted to do. I wanted it to have all of the accidental messiness and improvisational quality of real life. Like Mazursky movie at his best. I wanted you to see the crumbs on his shirt. You know, I never liked that about the Truffaut Hitchcock. Am I allowed to say that?
You
I never
are.
liked that about Truffaut Hitchcock, that you don't really get a sense of Hitchcock, which I think is a big mistake in a book called Truffaut Hitchcock. And I wanted to capture the man. That's where these movies come from.
Yeah.
They come from a whole life. That's why I'm a biographer. Because if you're any good, you put your whole life into a movie. So the crumbs on your shirt matter.
It's very, very true.
And you wrote a terrific book about Bob Fosse, who was not a simple person.
No.
To
But did you like the series? Did you like the Sam
I have to say that they took certain they were not true to the story. Well, how can I say this in a diplomatic way? It's a
You don't
great
have
question.
to.
They gave Gwen Verdon creative authority that she didn't have in real life. And that I think is a violation. We understand that when Hollywood comes and adapts a work of nonfiction or a historical movie, they're going to take some liberties, but hopefully they stay true to what we think of as the spirit of these people. I thought giving Gwen Verdon creative authority in these works was too far. And so that made it very hard for me to watch. What did you think of it?
I wanted him to dance more.
Oh,
I know it
that.
sounds ridiculous, but
No,
there.
it doesn't. No, it doesn't.
Well, so when Sam Rockwell, he had like one or really probably only like one or two scenes where you sort of saw him move a little, and he moves really well and beautifully. And I felt like that, considering that this is what Fosse is known for, more
Exactly.
than anything else, more
Exactly.
than making movies or anything else, is being a choreographer.
That's exactly right,
Why
Jesse.
was there not more of that?
Well, because I think that part of this, and this is just a theory I have, was about undermining the concept of the lone genius. And Fosse was a lone genius. That doesn't mean that he didn't have brilliant collaborators like Gwen Verdon, who was fantastic in her own right. But I think if you see Fosse dance, it goes against the unspoken project of that movie, which is called Fosse slash Verdon. Let's not forget. So I have a very complicated view. Not complicated. I have a very critical view of it.
Well, I think, but I think it's fair. See, so this is my feeling with all of these various limited series movies, all these things that are coming out about whether it's Judy Garland, whether it's Bob Fosse, whoever. There are a lot of younger people, not just young, but younger people who are not familiar with who these folks are in a rounded sense. How did they grow up? Where are they from? Were they that talented from the beginning? Where did it come from? And so I really want them to get that full picture, because if this is the only time you're going to watch or read something about Fosse, I want you to learn. And similarly with Judy Garland, something like that, you go, well, I don't want you to just see that last horrible year. I want you to understand what she got through and how talented she was.
And patient when it comes to Judy, how patient MGM was. Oh. Which doesn't always get told. The story that people have misunderstood was that L.B. Mayer and later Dorie Sherry were rough on her and they're feeding her pills. It's the exact opposite of the truth. And if you think about it, it doesn't make sense to be run, to be running down your greatest racehorse. It doesn't make any financial sense.
No, it, there's, but I say that's the thing. And again, we're very lucky. We get to spend time with historians. We get to spend time with archivists who love all of this so much. And what they want to do when you're interviewing Paul Mazursky, you want people to feel what you feel.
Right,
And you
yeah.
want them to get that whole picture. You want them to understand how special he is, how important he is. And if we just focus on the negative, which you're going to need to do for the drama of it, I understand that. But if we just focus on that, then you do take away from that genius. Judy Garland was a phenomenal performer, in
Yeah.
spite of all the issues that she had,
Yeah.
as her family was nuts, as she was too young and being judged harshly, all those different things. She was an incredible performer. What is that radio show that you have? What's the when she was,
Oh,
she's like
Korean.
eight.
Yes. Good News, MGM's Good
Oh.
News, where Wallace Beery is guest hosting, and he introduces her. She's 12, and she sings "Zing with the Strings of
Think
My
she's
Heart."
younger than that,
No,
but
I think
she's,
she's 12, and
and it's nuts.
unbelievable. Yeah,
You just go, I'm sorry, what?
you can't
At what
believe it.
age?
Right. Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah.
But that, now I want to do the thing that I always yell at him for not doing. I want to know, where did you grow up? What is your origin Batman story?
I grew up here in LA, I was always interested in the movies, and I was always listening in on my parents were not in the movie business, but many of their friends were. And so I would, until bedtime, get to steal little bits of my parents' friends' conversation. So I had a sense early on that movies were made by people. And I'm sure that was formative
Of course.
in some way, that we don't just go to the movies and they appear on screen, and we don't just go to the movies and they're accidental artifacts, that they're deliberate products of art, commerce, technology, creativity, psychology, science, that movies bring together. That movies are, and in fact, and this ties into the Coppola book, that movies are little communities. They take all types of people to make. Unlike paintings, books, movies bring together the talent of all departments. And I was in awe of that, as much in awe of that as I was by the product, by what was on screen.
And when did you decide to start writing? Because being an author, not easy. It's not an easy thing to do.
No. It was Jeanine Basinger.
That woman.
That woman, I went to Wesleyan for film, which is where I met Jeanine, studied with Jeanine, and I went to Wesleyan expressly to study with Jeanine. I grew up here in LA, and I was a young movie person, and the question was, where am I going to go to film school? My parents and I did a poll of many people we knew in the movie business. And the question was, should I go to UCLA, USC, NYU, AFI? And the overwhelming consensus was, no, you go to Middletown, Connecticut. And I said, you've got to be out of your mind. So anyhow, I went to Middletown, studied with Jeanine. Then I went to USC for film school. And when I got out of film school, of film production, and when I got out of film production, Jeanine said, what are you going to do now? And I said, geez, I don't know. She said, well, why don't you write a book for Wesleyan University? And I said, wow, I never thought of that. And so it was absolutely Jeanine's idea. And that was the Blake Edwards book.
Janine.
Yeah.
It's always Janine.
Always Jeanine, yeah.
And
Where would she be without me?
right?
Now,
Well,
yeah.
hey, the fact that you've written a book together, no
Yeah,
matter what happens, no
how
matter
about
what
that?
happens in life,
I
you two
know.
have written a book together.
I think about that.
Yeah.
I think about that sometimes when I get depressed or fearful, I think about no one can ever take away from me the fact that I have written a book with Janine.
It's called Hollywood, The Oral History. Came out last year, and it is a compendium of interview quotes taken from the archives of the AFI, the American Film Institute, who, to their great credit, started having veterans of the film business come and talk to their students from
Right.
the moment they opened their doors,
Yeah.
and got a lot of people on tape, on record, no pun intended, on the record, talking about how their careers came about and how they pursued their careers. And it's pretty special. But having written about Blake Edwards and having compiled your interviews with Paul Mazursky, you then spread your wings a little bit, more than a little bit, and at some point decided to tell the story of a movie, the biography of a movie. And the
Right.
first one you did this with was Breakfast at Tiffany's, and it became a crossover success.
Yeah.
People who don't read film books were interested in that book because they,
Because people are obsessed with that movie.
yeah, and with Audrey Hepburn. And then you did the same thing for Chinatown. And it was your approach to that was sort of the history of Hollywood and America leading up to Chinatown. So the first page of the book doesn't mention Chinatown.
Yeah, exactly.
It's everything that leads up and builds up to that moment, that specific moment in time, Roman Polanski rolled the cameras on Chinatown. More recently now, you've gone back to a single person, and you've done this book that is not a biography of Francis Ford
Right.
Coppola, an analysis of Francis Ford Coppola, which is really intriguing and very compelling and eye-opening for me. I learned a lot of things I didn't know. How did it come about?
I was always interested in zoetrope, the zoetrope dream of Francis's, this alternative to the Hollywood system, complement to the Hollywood system.
Sorry, we lost you for a second. I was trying to turn you up and you froze.
Oh.
Sorry. Go on.
Is there a way that Francis in the 1960s could reinvent the movie business? And I always took that to be the biographical center of his story and not The Godfather. The Godfather was an accident in Francis's life. It was not a project that he pursued. It was a project he took on because, as George Lucas said, we needed the money. We needed zoetrope. So zoetrope precedes The Godfather, it follows The Godfather. And so all of these books about Francis, they misposition this incredible movie as the center of his life and his identity. And I thought, well, they really are getting this guy wrong. He's not about The Godfather. He's about creating a better filmmaking world for the next generation. And I think that's part of why Francis was willing to talk to me, because I wasn't going to him and saying, tell me about Marlon Brando.
Right.
So that's what it was about for me. And of course, it's always about talking to the audience, helping the audience imagine a better Hollywood. Is the Hollywood we're in now the best possible Hollywood? No, it's not. Let's use the all of the possibilities of history to try to help us think about how it could be better.
Yeah.
Let's go shopping in the past and
Yeah.
buy our a new wardrobe.
Yeah. It's funny you say wardrobe, because with Francis Ford Coppola, he likes to wear mismatched socks, usually bright colors, And
True.
he likes to wear either a flower or something on his lapel.
Yeah.
How do I know this? Because at the Santa Barbara Film Festival, I don't remember how many years ago, I was sitting backstage in the green room with him. And it was just me and him for a while. And I didn't say anything because I'm not stupid. And I just sat in silence. And then I finally looked over and realized he had one hot pink sock and one neon blue sock. And I said, "I really like your socks." And he
Yeah.
said, "Why?" I said, "They're cool looking." He says, "You should have fun socks." And I was like, "Well, that's what I'm taking away." And then other people started coming in because they were getting ready to go on stage. And he just didn't really want to talk to anybody. He wasn't rude. He just made it very clear he didn't really want to talk. But then a friend of ours walked in with her infant daughter. He, without saying anything, got up and took the baby and started playing with the baby.
That's it.
And her name's Pearl, and she's now, I think, 15. Took Pearl, was playing with her and having the time of his life. And I just sat there going, this is the weirdest, like in the best way, weirdest thing.
Well, you saw who he
And
was. That's who Francis is. He wants to be together. And he wants to play with children, and he wants to talk about socks. He wants to hang out, Francis. And that's what movies are about for him, and what the theater is about for him. It's about being together. You know, this is not, as I said before, this is not a solo art form, even though it's led by a it's led by a most cases a director. It's not a solo art form. It's a hanging out art form. And that's what Francis loves to do. And part of that is family. That's what a good film production should be, is a family. And that's oftentimes where the best work comes.
Yeah, he said, I interviewed him once about rehearsal. And for him, rehearsal time is fun time.
Right, that's it.
He's, he leads theater games,
That's it.
improv type theater games.
I would pay to watch
He
that.
gets, he wants everybody to get to know each other, feel comfortable with each other and around each other. Because he's going to use that. He's going to make use of that when he's making the movie. But this is not a rehearsal in the way you might think, where we're getting our lines memorized and blocking. He may do that too, but it's more important that it builds a family.
Right. That's exactly right. And you see that, Jesse, if you want to look at it on the Outsiders DVD.
I love that movie.
There's
Gotta
behind,
love
I
that
love
movie.
that movie too. There's behind the scenes footage of the rehearsal process, and it's exactly as Leonard is describing it. And that is a movie about a family. And one of the things I learned in doing this book is that Francis wants the movie. He wants the process of making the movie to feel like what the movie is about. So if he's making a movie about a family, he wants to create a family. And one of the ways he does that, as Leonard says, is through the rehearsal process, improv games, being together. And that goes directly into the movie. Sometimes he's rewriting the script the night before, sometimes the day of, sometimes he's improvising on camera, which you could imagine drives a certain kind of producer crazy. But Francis, that's the way he works.
And when you're him, and at this point especially, if you want to do it that way, that's how you're going to do it.
Right.
And it's the proof is in the pudding at the end of the day.
Yeah.
He is an unapologetic idealist and a dreamer, which is why it was so appropriate that he told the story of Tucker, and the man who wanted to buck the big three auto manufacturers by
That's
making,
Francis.
and it is him. It is him in spades. And yet, I feel sort of sad for him that he derived no pleasure from The Godfather and The Godfather Part Two, films that are so rich and offer so much to all of us. didn't give him any pleasure,
Well,
apparently.
I can tell you that Godfather One, yes, that was a slog for Francis. He was scared. He felt the studio was against him. The studio, in fact, was against him. He didn't collaborate. He didn't. He and Gordon Willis didn't get on. Gordon Willis was thinking about the shot. Francis was thinking about the performances. All of those things. And let's not forget, Francis was not proven by that point. He had made Finian's Rainbow, The Rain People, You're a Big Boy Now. These were not wildly distinguished movies. So he really felt he had to prove himself and was afraid he wasn't. Godfather 2, by that point, Francis was he got to call the shots, and he took the movie because Bob Evans at Paramount said, "All right, Francis, we're going to do this your way now." So that was a happier shoot for him. But he didn't take either picture because he wanted to make them.
How do you become comfortable? How do you, when sitting with someone like him, how do you shake your nerves enough to sort of do what you want to do?
I don't. I was very intimidated by Francis, not because he is intimidating, although sometimes he is, but because I brought to it so much, not just awe, but wanting to do a good job.
Of course.
So it doesn't make you feel natural. It always feels a little bit like an audition. Even though I got the job, I'm still feel like I'm auditioning. I found we didn't quite have the same sense of humor, so it made it, I didn't really feel that the chemistry was always there. But he was a fabulous subject because he opened every door. He didn't say no to any question.
Wow,
He
that's
was a teacher.
significant.
That was significant. And so that really helped me made comfortable, that helped me feel comfortable. He really allowed us to swim in his mind together. I'd say, Francis, what about over here? What about this? What about that? Well, maybe he'd say, maybe that's really the kind of interview subject you want. It's some guy who's gonna, some or woman or some person who's gonna be playful with their own biography and will allow for the unconscious to come in. That's special.
Did you spend almost as much time talking to his wife, Eleanor?
Not as much time, but I spent a significant chunk of time. She it's not in her nature to be as playful, but she was equally honest. Sometimes, so honest that I felt a responsibility that I don't even know if I was comfortable with. And it's a very intimate book for that.
Yes,
For
it
that,
is.
very intimate book.
Have
God,
you
was
had
it?
any feedback from them, either one of them?
Yes, Francis and I went over the book. We had an interesting scenario. It's not authorized, which means I could do what I wanted, but what I wanted was to get it right, and Francis wanted to get it right. So we would go over it and over it, and I would balance his memory with what I heard. And finally, we got to a point where we both believed the version that was there. I never got a lot of praise from Francis, but I did find out from my publisher that he ordered 100 copies.
Hey,
So
that's the same.
I think that's a good review. I think that's a good review.
It
Eleanor was more withholding in her reaction. She wasn't comfortable with a lot of the stuff that I wrote. And some of it was stuff she told me.
Yeah.
So maybe she didn't remember that she told me. Maybe it read different on the page.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, it was fascinating to see her discomfort with what I thought she was perfectly comfortable with.
Well, because she put up with a lot.
She sure did. Yeah.
And but she also understood his artist's
You sure?
aspirations and the big reach that he was always making and felt that he never quite grasped. She's an artist too. And
Yes.
so she understood that. But then there was the infidelities and embarrassments, you know, public, I guess humiliation is the only word that she endured and chose to endure.
And chose to endure and wrote about in her masterful book Notes about the making of Apocalypse Now. One of my favorite books about the making of a movie. She writes so poetically about what she's going through. But it's a weird thing, Leonard, I guess, and Jesse, it's a it when you tell someone else your story and to then look back in the mirror of their writing, you might not see what you want to see. You know, I've never been in that position. Most of us have never been in that position, you know.
No.
It's
Well,
hard to imagine.
I mean, it's been so interesting doing this show, and we don't edit much for the in many cases, not at all.
Not at all.
In many cases, the show just the only edit would be somebody coughs or, you know, something like that. But almost always they just go straight out. But every now and then somebody will say something in a way you can tell they don't mean, or it'll come across wrong something. And we'll go in and we'll change it. And the reason, and we both have the same feeling about it, is I don't ever want anybody to be embarrassed, especially when that's not what you're trying, you know. We slip up. I mean, even obviously now, as things like pronouns are a whole conversation, I forget who we, oh, it was a lovely character actor who I'm a big fan of, who was on the show, and he said, he was talking about one of his early films. He said, you know, he's like, I don't want to sit there and cry like a girl. And he goes, no, I don't mean it like that. Cry like a boy. No, wait. And I said to him, I go, don't worry about it.
We'll cut it out.
Don't worry about it. Because he was so afraid. He didn't want to be offensive and he didn't want to make anybody feel funny. But we're all sort of in that now where we have to be a bit more careful. And so I've always felt like, yeah, I don't ever want anybody to look back and go, I can't believe they let me, you know. If you can fix it, if you can fix something that's not altering a person's, you know, everything, it's then just do
Well,
that.
that's why, you know, when I do interviews with major figures, I don't mean major in terms of fame. I mean when they're central to the book,
Yeah.
I send them their interviews
Yeah.
back, and I say, you know, that you what you said to me, you said because it came out of you in a moment,
Right.
and it's a big ask to expect a moment to speak for a life.
Yeah.
And so I send it back to them and I say, feel free to change or reflect, you know, improve.
I have never encountered this before, that it's such a high standard of ethics you're
Sure. What's
practicing.
that word?
No, I really admire that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's not just selflessness. It's not just selflessness. It deepens the relationship
Of
I
course, yeah, of
have
course.
with the person I'm working with. And then that allows for a better second interview or a better third interview. So I think it's the way to, and I only write about people I admire. So it's not like I'm not a gotcha interviewer.
Right.
You know, so it's a great policy.
Well, it's so funny you say. I think about this all the time because what, again, those terms that make me crazy now, viral, things that go viral, right? This waitress works in this restaurant and she does TikToks about her nicest customers and the rudest customers and all this stuff. And all I can think is that my friends, and me included, if I ever did that, I would never be able to go any of the places I go or be any of the
That's
places
right.
I am. They would
Yeah.
never let me in again. Because the whole point is that as soon as people do not feel comfortable with you there, it's done. And, you know, even if you're Army Archer, like,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
they're
No,
aware.
there's a lot of in the media around Hollywood, and Leonard knows this, he's been doing this a long time. There is a lot of gossip and a lot of misinformation,
Oh yeah,
probably
constant.
more than in any other industry
Yeah.
in America. So our job as historians is in a way even harder than it would be, if we weren't writing about people who are so publicly misconstrued.
Yeah.
And who was it? Who said everyone has two businesses, their own and show business.
Yeah.
And everyone thinks they know the movies,
Yeah.
right? Everyone thinks,
And the people in them.
Yeah.
and the people in them, everyone, because we have intimate relationships with these works. We think sometimes even consciously that we know everything, even though we haven't done a lick of research or a lick of questioning. And so that's why there's so much wrong about how people under going back to Judy Garland, what we were talking about,
Yeah.
What was the biggest surprise to you? What did you learn about Francis that you didn't know that came as a surprise?
He really likes pink socks.
No,
He really likes pink.
I was surprised. I didn't know. Hadn't read anything else about him really, over the years about making of certain films. But I didn't know that he had an older brother who was his parents' favorite and that they actively belittled him while growing up, and sort of drove down his self-esteem.
That's a great that I was trying to think what I really l surprised me, and that was a big surprise. I in writing about artists, what you learn is that it does come back to, if not an unhappy childhood, then the perception of an unhappy child, the perception of loneliness, a feeling of isolation. Whether or not they are literally isolated, they prove themselves to be isolated, which I guess is isolation. Francis had that, and the degree to it, Leonard, surprised me. The degree to it, and the degree of the neglect from the mother surprised me. The act of belittling, as you say, that was painful for me to encounter.
Of course it was. Well, that's because it's a, you'd be sad to hear that from anyone, but it's especially sad when somebody is creative and maybe a bit gentle. You know,
Yeah,
they need a bit more of that care, and it makes you really sad that they didn't have that when it's clear that that's what they wanted. And it also, when you both say that, makes the other part of it, which is trying to build a family behind the scenes and to bring it all makes sense that he's
Got it, Jesse.
to
Got
build
it.
that community so he has that feeling and he wants to give other people that feeling because he didn't have
Exactly
it.
right. Exactly right.
It's always something, isn't it? It's always something.
Well, you learn this in biography. You learn that humans are patterns, and you've got to find those patterns. It's or another way to put it is themes. We all have themes. It's why artists, in some degree, make the same work over and over again, because they when you get down to it, we are one or two or three things more than the others. And it's part of my job to get into those things.
Now, when you were doing Breakfast at Tiffany's, so I am, I say it a million times because it always, I'm fascinated by pop culture. I am fascinated by what gets stuck in pop culture. I'm fascinated by the fact that people can identify something but maybe not even know anything beyond a photo. Most people can identify James Dean and Marilyn Monroe. Why? Because if you go into Urban Outfitters, there are 7,000 posters that every hipster has and every college student had on their wall. Breakfast at Tiffany's and her in that specific outfit, the whole thing, there are t-shirts and posters and everything. I've asked people if they've seen the movie. Half the time, they don't even know what I'm talking about. They just know this image. And then I realized that something we almost never see is Audrey Hepburn older. They don't want to know. They don't want to know. They want her to be that perfect moment, and they don't want to know anything else.
Well, Audrey Hepburn, the great stars of the studio era were about something. That's what persona is. They had persona, and that's what persona is. It's about something. You feel like you know a part of them, even independent of the characters that they're playing. And one of the things that Audrey Hepburn was about was being on the cusp of womanhood. She was a girl woman, and it inclined her to movies about growing up. And when she became an older woman, she was naturally distanced from that very power that made her special, which isn't to say that Two for the Road is not wonderful, or Audrey Hepburn in They All Laughed, Bogdanovich's movie, is not wonderful, but it's not what makes her special. What makes her special is something we see in Roman Holiday, Breakfast at Tiffany's, and Sabrina.
And people are just, I'm always amazed. Every Halloween, you see little kids that the parents dress their kids up like that. Women, I mean, stars, everybody. It is such, they love it.
Well, to
They're
combine
connected to
the way she did, to
it.
combine the good girl of Audrey Hepburn with the bad girl of Holly Golightly, it is a real rarity. And that's what makes her so appealing to young women who are just beginning to become sexual and yet have still retained their innocence. If you imagine Marilyn Monroe in that part, which is who Capote wanted, it would not be the same thing. We would not have those posters. So Audrey is speaking to young women at that point in their life. It's the power of movies that gives, I say young women because it mostly is young women, that myth. I mean, what else can we call it? This image of Audrey as Holly Golightly keeps recurring throughout the generations as relevant. Is the same concept as the Greek gods. They are there for a ritual moment and in human experience, just as Audrey, as Breakfast at Tiffany's, is there for the ritual coming of age moment.
Even the name, even Holly Golightly gets used all the time. It's in songs. People use it as their nom de plume for different things. It's just, as I say, it just blows me away that something connects the way it connected.
And when people, younger people especially, first see the movie, they are charmed by it until Mickey Rooney appeared.
Yeah.
And you
Whoops.
having written a book by and with Blake Edwards are the right person to address this.
Yes.
Mr. Yamaguchi?
Mr. Yeah, I think so. Yes, I think so. How did that happen? How did that happen? Mickey Rooney and Blake Edwards had a long-standing friendship, and they worked on Richard Quine movies together. A really good one that I just saw recently, Drive a Crooked Road.
Yeah, it is good.
Remember that? It's a good movie. Anyhow, doesn't answer the question. It was a case of two friends joking around, and it seemed like a good idea at the time. And Blake Edwards is very much on the record as having regretted that. It's as simple as that. It's as simple as that. Yeah. And so did Richard Shepard, the producer who I got to speak with. He was very angry that that had been allowed in his own movie. And it was his decision then. It's hard for people to understand. Look, we're going to look back on who we are today and regret a lot of our behavior. It's
sure. It's
hard to imagine because we're so effortful in our political correctness.
Yeah.
I guarantee it's going to happen. We're going to say, how could we ever have behaved that way?
Yeah.
I painted myself black, but I don't mean like, I mean like the actual color black. A friend has a character that he draws, and I dressed up for Halloween as that character. And for years, we used to joke that I was going to get in trouble. I never have, because it is so clear that I am painted black with this massive black wig and this crazy black dress. But at the time, when I said to my friends, I go, how could nobody could find that offensive? I'm literally painted. I don't look like a person. I look like an object. But I laugh about it now. I go, man, it'd be really funny to see someone try. You're like, she's trying to look like a wall. Nailed
yeah,
it.
I know.
Nailed it, guys.
I know what you mean.
Other than ordering 100 books, what is the most interesting or memorable piece of feedback you've gotten from somebody you've written about?
I'll tell you, I'll never forget the moment. Anne Reinking, who was married to Bob Fosse, not married, who was the partner of Bob Fosse professionally and personally for many years, was a huge help to me in the writing of my Fosse book. And my respect for Fosse is even beyond my normal respect for my admiration. My interest in Fosse is so singularly deep that writing the book was very scary for me, because I really wanted to do it right. And when Anne Reinking told me that she thought I did more for Fosse than anyone other than Paddy Chayefsky, I said, I will take that one. I will take that one for my dark moments.
Yeah.
What do I say to you all the time?
Save it up for a rainy day.
That's exactly right.
Whenever something nice or someone says something really lovely, I say, remember that when you're having a shit day.
Yes.
Remember that.
That goes right alongside writing a book with Janine.
Yeah.
Truly. No, I say it's so special that you got to do that with her. And as you say, it's forever.
But maybe that doesn't answer your question. That was more about comforting my esteem. Maybe what you meant is what did they tell me that might maybe change the way, or what did they tell me about my subject?
No, you answered the question right.
Okay.
Not you.
Okay.
Just you. No, look, I mean, this is the thing. This is a phrase my dad always uses with filmmakers, which is nobody wants to be told they have an ugly baby.
That's
you know,
exactly right.
Doing what you do As you say, I mean, obviously you choose to only write these books about something that you care about and is positive. You're not trying to write a book that is about something you hate.
I don't know how you would write a biography of Hitler. I don't know how
Right.
you do that. I
Yeah,
don't know,
let's.
because part of your job is to understanding. You
Yeah.
know, I don't know how a person could do that. To
Well, no, but
yeah.
that's what the actors say that. Actors say that when they have to play
Right.
the baddie or the villain, they say, I cannot look at them like that. I have to look at them. And you go, yeah, well, but some people are just terrible.
That's
But because you are trying to, you don't want to lie, you don't want to pretend like someone's perfect. They have to have flaws, otherwise they're not human. In the case of people who are well known, some of those flaws may be out in the open. People know whether it's affairs or anything else. To pretend that they're not there would make no sense. But you're trying to find a sort of a middle where you're honest, but you don't want to hurt anybody.
And I ask myself, does it come out on screen?
Yeah.
Is this relevant to what we're getting? I said it. Does this come out on screen?
Yeah.
If it doesn't come out on screen, it's probably dish. And that's not good storytelling.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to be a good storyteller, and that stuff leaves the cutting room floor. Now, it doesn't mean I leave out salacious material on principle. I'll put it in
Sure.
if it comes out on screen.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, as I say, you can't pretend, that
Yeah.
everything is perfect. And frankly, it wouldn't serve the book,
Yes.
if
Yes.
it's just fluff.
Right. Right.
And you're not a biographer. You're not, if you're just sort of going, everything was great. You should have seen.
Right. Right. Wait, well, look, when you stay in a look, I've never been in a long relationship. You know, Jesse, you're married. Leonard, you've been married a long time. You love the person, even though
Mm
X. You still love the person, even though X. And it's
My
no different.
husband has been telling me he's going to build these four pieces of furniture for 2 years, Sam.
Where are
2 years.
they?
They are sitting in
Where are they?
boxes, Sam. They have not moved in 2 years.
There you go.
Just
There you
saying.
go.
Just saying.
I would put that in the book, and I would ask him to reflect on why, and I would think, okay, all
And you know what
right.
he says? Busman's holiday. That's what he says.
Well,
It's a busman's holiday.
should we let him off? I would say not good enough.
Right?
Tell him to call me, and I and those. That furniture will be built tomorrow.
If only. A
If
girl can
only.
dream, Sam. A girl can dream. Now, it's look, everybody has the good and the bad of who they are.
Yeah.
Though I do always say that someday, I've threatened my dad with this for years. I'm going to write a tell-all pamphlet. And let me
About
tell you,
Leonard?
tell-all pamphlet, it is going to be vicious.
Daddy dearest.
That's right. It's going to be
Daddy
vicious.
dearest, yeah.
You're going to hear all the dirt.
And it's going to be 400 words.
That's right. That's right. He's colorblind. You know how hard that is for me? You know how hard that is? It's very hard. It's very stressful for me, the colorblindness. No, my mom and I call my dad Mr. Magoo. He is just
Funny. I'm called Mr.
genuinely,
Magoo all the time. Yeah.
like the nicest, kindest person who has no idea when he walks out without a belt or leaves his bag or does anything like that. Like, I think we believe very much my dad does not have an actual mean bone in his
Oh,
body.
he
I
doesn't.
don't think it exists.
Oh, he doesn't.
But it is hilarious. Just sort of, my mom will always go, he wrote his first book at 17.
Isn't that amazing?
Couldn't remember to take the keys, but he
Isn't
wrote
that
his first
amazing?
book.
Well, that's where Leonard lives. No, it's where I live too. And sometimes I forget to have dinner until I'm hungry. I thought, God, I'm starving.
This is why you buy a wife. This
This
is
is
our
why you buy
purpose.
a wife,
We feed you.
exactly. And this
So
is
have
why
you eaten
I,
anything?
yes, right. Yeah, no, when you do what Leonard does and what I do and you're in your head,
Yeah.
your feet aren't always on the ground.
But that is why you need, and this is the whole thing of figuring out what you are and what you need. My dad very much likes that my mom is the boss.
Yes.
She handles the tough stuff. We always say he's the talent. We let
He's
him be the
talent.
talent. We
Correct.
just make sure everything else appears around him.
That's
He
what that's called a
just
good
do that.
producer.
Yeah. Yes.
Alec Baldwin is a great
Yep.
producer. Yeah.
This is what
And
we
a great
do.
character. She's
Yeah.
also a great
Oh
character.
God. She's just so damn
Yeah.
funny. Just
Yeah.
so damn funny. But no, it's an art writing about somebody and being honest, but also wanting to be kind.
That's right.
You know?
That's exactly right.
And you walk that line really well. Really,
Thanks, Lynn.
really well. You are honest.
Yeah.
And you let the chips fall. But there are no chips.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you, Leonard.
Yeah.
Thank you, Leonard. That's so good. That's what I want to be.
Yeah.
That's
what I want to be, especially in writing about the movie business, which receives so much rancor,
Yeah.
so much from so much hostility.
Yeah.
People think that this is just a bad town, a venal people, Day of the Locust, and
No.
how bad could it be? The Maltons live here.
Yeah, right.
How bad could it be?
But this is again, when you surround yourself with the right kind of people, I laugh. My dad has two little groups that he's got a little email group he's in, and then he has a sort of a nerdy old Hollywood group that he joins in on the weekends, and they just celebrate everything, you
Yeah.
know. So whether you're talking to Larry Karaszewski and Scott Alexander
Carl
about
Karaszewski.
who just passed away,
Shecky Green.
Shecky Green, you know, you're talking, he's talking to those guys about that, and they're just enjoying themselves. You know, you're with Jerry Beck and you're talking about animation, any of these things, you find the people around you who love what you love, and it's a celebration as opposed to just isn't everything terrible,
Exactly
which
right.
is a much nicer way to live.
Exactly
Wait.
right.
Sam, you know how much I admire your work and continue to. And I'm recommending the Francis Coppola book to anybody who is curious about this man who's had such an impact on our lives with the films that he has made. And he's not done yet. Far from it.
No. That's the other thing, though, isn't it? Is that people who work in this, they want to work in it forever. You know?
You say no one retires from Hollywood.
No. Norman Lear just died. I read a thing, he was having meetings like the week before, you know.
Yeah.
He wanted to keep going, keep going. It's beautiful in that way.
It is beautiful because
You know?
Hollywood, and this is part of what the book is about. Hollywood is fun when it's good.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't everyone want to be in this business? This
Yeah.
is a great business.
Yeah.
It can be. It has been a great business. That's why no one retires.
That's it.
No.
That's your next book, Why
No.
No One
Right.
Retires.
Well,
That's it.
don't you retire. He's
Thanks,
too
Linda.
young. He's got a long time.
I won't if you won't.
All right, that's a deal.
Thank
Thank you, Sam.
you, Sam.
Waltons, you put a smile on my face.
Good.
Good.
I hope
Good
we get
way.
to see you.
Good way to start the new year.
Thank you, guys. Happy New Year.
Yeah,
Happy
I
New
can't
Year.
believe it.
Happy New Year.
I
Can't
And
believe
to
it.
all our listeners, too.
Yeah, Happy
Very
New
happy
Year.
and healthy New Year.